This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest is Gene McCarthy, the president and CEO of ASICS America Corporation. Gene not only is a guru when it comes to athletic footwear and apparel, being the head of so many companies through the years, but also an All-American track runner at Fordham and a semifinalist in the 1980 Olympic trials. Let's head now to the Landmark Restaurant at Columbus Circle in New York City and meet our guest, Gene McCarthy. Gene, thanks for joining us.
It's all my pleasure. Thank you for having me. What an honor.
Who better to be in charge of athletic footwear than someone who used it to great potential and force as a runner? Marty Licori was one of the first guests on Sports Jam. And I believe Marty Licori is one of the main reasons why you're sitting in your position today as in the top of this business.
Yeah, you know, I have to give Marty maybe all of the credit. So here I was, a kid in the Bronx, 13 years old, went to an Irish Christian Brother high school by Yankee Stadium. And I realized I was not going to be the point guard on the basketball team. I'm 5'7", 140 pounds. And I joined the track team. And later that year, my freshman year, I saw a copy of Sports Illustrated, and on the cover was Marty Licori and Jim Ryan coming around the turn at Franklin Field at the Penn Relays, and it said, Licori grins and wins. I believe it was 1971. I told my mom and dad, I'm going to break the four-minute mile. My mom and dad just nodded politely, thinking, whatever that means, great. I'll fast forward 8 years after a good career at All Hallows in the Bronx and then at Fordham, where I was an All-American. I graduated having only run 4:03. So then, Doug, what I did was I did something that people don't do anymore. I wrote a letter. That's a piece of paper, a pen. And I wrote a letter to Marty Licori, and I had the good fortune that he went to an Irish Christian Brother high school in Newark, New Jersey, called Essex Catholic. And Marty was in Florida at the time, and I got the address through one of our Irish Christian Brothers, and he said, if you come down, I own a chain of sporting goods stores, I'll get you a job, and I'll help you with your dream. And then that was in 1978. 2 years later, after working with Marty, I don't think I learned anything about the workouts. They were unexceptional. But boy, to this day, will I give him credit for how I think and how I approach things. And just to put yourself on a higher plane, spiritually, emotionally, and in some cases even an ego, because you need an ego to be a great runner. Marty got injured in 1980. Jimmy Carter had already declared there'd be no Olympics for America because they were in Moscow. He hurt himself skiing, there was a race in Kingston, Jamaica. The race director was a guy named John Carlos, who's very famous for his great motions at the Olympics several years earlier. John did not want me to come down. He never heard of me, but Marty insisted. So I went down there, and I ran the 1,500 meters, and I ran 342.6, which the equivalent is 359.6. I got third place behind Philbert Bailly and Steve Ovette. And so that's all Marty. But the best thing is, I think, Doug, is that 30-plus years later, my avocation and my vocation are the same thing. I'm able to do something that I love, and I was able to see the world, get a free education, and have a 30-plus year career in this industry.
That race that you mentioned happened in 1980, May 9th, but 10 years later, something that you remember even more than that race.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I do believe in magic, even though I was brought up Irish Catholic. I do believe in magic. And on that day, 10 years later, my son Patrick was born. And I didn't know that until he was 13 years old when I happened to go back and look at a press clipping about it. So May 9th, 1980 is nearly as important as May 9th, 1990.
You mentioned this knowledge that you gained. Obviously, everybody wants it, Gene, because you have moved from company to company and headed all these wonderful apparel companies through the years. When you take a look at yourself, what is it that everybody wants you to run their company?
Well, I'm flattered that anybody would, and I know at times it looks like I'm in the corporate version of the Witness Protection Program, go from one company to the next. I think it's a combination of things. Number one is I am consumer obsessed, and I have been since I was a kid. I've always been fascinated delivering dry cleaning here in the streets of New York. I've always just been obsessed by people and consumers, and that's helped me serve any brand. The other one is that I've done so many jobs in this industry, from being a tech rep in the field all the way to a CEO. I've never forgotten any of those things. And my relationship with our employees is on that level. When I talk to customer service, I throw myself back to when I did customer service. When I talk to our marketing people, it brings up those days. So I like to have people around me that feel that they're empowered, they're engaged. I can push their buttons. I want to make them successful, not necessarily comfortable. But at the same time, I want them to feel like they're family. And I think if I can be so humble, that's what's worked for me.
You would be fantastic in that television show that had you go back. The boss goes back and does all the other jobs because you could do them all. When it comes to ASICS, why did you decide that you wanted to be a part of this company?
Well, I was at the time I was at a company called Merrill. I was the president of an outdoor brand, and I'm not really sure that I'm passionate about the outdoors. So the opportunity to get back into the athletic side, particularly a true running brand, was completely desirable. But I think there was another reason. When I was 13 years old and I found out I was going to be on the track team, because I had no choice, according to one of the brothers at All Hallows, I went to Paragon to buy my first pair of track shoes, and they were Tiger shoes. So I think after all these years, the circle is almost complete. So this is a personal thing for me as well.
Wow, that's a nice touch to that. Let's talk about some of the things that you're excited about when it comes to ASICS and the footwear and what's exciting you as new products out there.
Well, I will say this. I describe this brand as the most famous brand that nobody knows anything about. And when you learn about the brand, and that's my job, is to maybe educate, our consumers and new consumers as well. Here's a brand that started in 1949 by a man who was concerned about youth in Japan after the war. And war toward Japan was very depressing. And he felt that health and fitness would be a way to keep their self-esteem up. And that's how the company started. So fast forward many years, and here we are, nearly 4 billion U.S. global brand. But it still has that as its essence, and it still has the idea that we make the best running shoes in the world. I would stand firmly, on those grounds. But even when the company changed its name from Onitsuka Tiger to ASICS in 1977, which was the merger of three companies, it was surprising to even me that I didn't know this, that ASICS is actually an acronym for a Latin phrase that loosely translated stands for of sound mind, of sound body. And that being the essence of the brand, knowing that we make the greatest running shoes in the world, knowing that the world is shifting because of my consumer obsessions, I think it's just a great opportunity to bring this brand up to be one of the big players in the industry.
You're not only obsessed, but so are the consumers when it comes to getting racing, running material. Whether you're a star runner like you were, or you're just someone who wants to exercise and keep fit, this is a tremendous industry right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I think there's something about running. I think the simplicity of running is what appeals to everybody. Everybody can run in some manner, shape, or form. From a business perspective, I break it into we have runners, and then we have people who run, and then we have this big, big, big category called people who wear running shoes. So, but you have no permission to sell to people who wear running shoes unless you take care of the runners and the people who run first. So it is quite an industry. But there's also a shift going on. People were always proud to be runners in the past. Now with millennials, they may run 3 or 4 days a week, some of them, but they don't want to be called a runner. It's what NPD calls the end of the ers, runners, tennis players. People just want to be who they are, and running is just a part of their life. So that's my mantra internally. Up until 2015 when I joined, running was our life. Now running is a part of our life. So while it's still there, it's still huge globally, and it still means a lot to a lot of people, its definition is forming new ways of describing itself to new consumers.
What does your closet look like? How many different pairs of ASICS shoes do you have right now?
I have the good fortune that the price is just right where I work. You'd be surprised. I will never have more than 2 performance shoes. So when I do work out, which I do every day, I only have 2 because I don't want the choices. I want to know when I get up in the morning that it's one or the other, depending on my workout. But then I have all of this heritage ASICS product from over the years, ASICS Tiger, Onitsuka Tiger, which not only I'm proud to wear because, quite honestly, it's very fashionable these days to wear some of our shoes, but also because it takes me back and remind me of how this all started when I was a kid. So I have about, I would say right now, there's never fewer than 40 pair in my closet.
You're listening to Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest is Gene McCarthy, the president and CEO of ASICS America Corporation. He's at the top of his business right now, and he was at the top of his racing form back in 1980 when he was a semifinalist in the 1980 Olympic Trials. And at the Houston Astrodome at the Brooks Invitational in 1980, with the legendary sportscaster Dick Stockton calling the action.
We have Gene McCarthy of Athletic Attic. He has the beard, and he is in the lane six. So we've got a lot of talent in this race, Jim.
We really do, Dick. I think the start's going to be critical. What happens on the first turn will determine a lot of things.
So we have a distinguished group. As a matter of fact, we have five of the top 11 milers competing here, and that says a lot. And as John Walker said, you practically have an Olympic field.
Dick, we may see something develop here where, you know, someone like Coughlin, who was traveling last night a little tired, may try and control the race from the very beginning by going to the front. So we'll see as soon as they start what happens.
We could see Mass back. We could see Flynn. They could take the lead. And we're underway here at the Indoor Mile Challenge. Five laps around this Astrodome track. Gene McCarthy now has taken a lead. It's important the pace early here, isn't it? Because if the pace is not that fast early, we have no chance for a record.
Not only that, Dick, but then it kind of sets up the rest of the race as being slow in a kicker's race. So we have someone going out in the very beginning, Gene McCarthy, setting a pace.
But he has to sustain it through the half, doesn't he?
He has to sustain it, and he has to be enough of a challenge that the other runners go with him.
Eamon Coughlin right now is running fourth in our race. Gene McCarthy, and now we have reached the quarter. 58.9, and the record for the quarter, 58.7, so we're right there.
Gene McCarthy at the Brooks Invitational in 1980. Let's head back now to the Landmark Restaurant at Columbus Circle and find out more about the CEO and president of ASICS America Corporation.
People see you come to ASICS, they know your background, they know your experience in the industry, but they also know you're fit, you're still using the product. I would have to think that makes a difference.
It does, but it's only because it becomes natural to me. I'm not doing this because, you know, it's part of the role. You know, it's who I am, and I think, you know, what we do for a living is, you know, minuscule based on who we are. What we do is not who we are. But at the same time, I don't know that I could lead a team if I weren't authentic enough in my own right. Or I could have a conversation with you or consumers, for that matter, if I weren't authentic in my own right and you got put my money where my mouth is. So I'm not fit because it's part of my job. I'm fit because it's who I am.
And you're living in California now, right?
I would say I'm living in many major airports across the globe, and California is where I store my clothing and a little bit of furniture.
As you mentioned, you grew up in the Bronx, and we're here in New York City. When you come back to this area, and I know you do often, how much do you think about the days that you grew up in the Bronx?
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually was kind of blue, if not melancholy, this past New York City Marathon, because it was our last time sponsoring. And even though I wasn't with ASICS to enjoy all 25 years, I was blue about it because I grew up with the New York Roadrunners. And I have two vivid memories. One I shared with you earlier is when in the summer times I used to deliver dry cleaning in Manhattan for a place in Murray Hill. And Bill Bradley, Carly Simon, and Soupy Sales were my customers. And I never got a tip. And that's when I realized they tipped at Christmas time, and I was in school at Christmas time. But my other vivid memory was being in the city and in 1977, in the summer, a hot, sticky day, to run a race, a New York Roadrunners race in Central Park, and then the blackout happened. And I didn't know how to get home, get back to Co-op City. And it still sticks with me that when I'm here, there's a part of me that was kind of an eerie moment for me. And I think even though the city has changed dramatically over the last 30, 40 years, there was a part of a group of us, whether it was Matt Centrowitz, Craig Masbach, Marcel Philippe, or myself, some of my friends and peers to this day, we all went off to different places because we wanted to take our running to another level, because we wanted to see running was a means to an end, not a means means in itself, you know, as it is for many people. So New York was our starting point, but New York, when we come back, when I was at the marathon, I went down to the finish line, and I was with a good old friend, Eamon Coughlin, and I was talking to Rod Dixon, who is quite a personality, by the way, and that's the beauty of it, because we've all have some history here in the city, and we come back, we don't talk about it, but we can feel it.
We're speaking with Gene McCarthy, who's the president and CEO of ASICS America Corporation, here on Sports Jam. In a prior interview, you mentioned Frank Shorter, Jane Fonda, and Michael Jordan. Tell our listeners what they have in common.
Yeah, they're interesting because I think we all look at these moments in sports or even the sports industry as being just, you know, singular events, but they're not. They're all the confluence of different things. When you go back to Nike, for example, my first employer, they were a track and field company, and then something happened in 1972, and it was a horrific event at the most televised Olympics at that time in Munich, which was, you know, the terrorists, you know, on the Israeli athletes. But then everybody rallied around patriotism, and to see Frank Shorter, I think it was the first time they had such an extensive coverage of the marathon at the Olympics, to see Frank Shorter brought a lot of patriotism to the forefront. At the same time, that event, as horrific it was, drew a lot of attention. But then there was a guy named Jim Fix who wrote a book called The Book of Running. So this thing that people used to laugh at you when you're on campus being a runner now all of a sudden became, you know, the nation's, you know, sensation. When I go to look at Michael Jordan, we all think, you know, about Air Jordan, but he wasn't Air Jordan when he joined the league. It was the confluence of three things. He came in to the NBA, which at the time was struggling. And it was living through this Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson, which many people thought was thinly veiled, the racial divide in America. Michael came in the middle of those two and just changed the game. But two other things happened. One was the beginning of MTV, and then the other was ESPN. And it's back when John McEnroe wanted to learn how to play the guitar and Carlos Santana wanted to learn how to play tennis. And at that point, that's where sports, culture, fashion, and everything came together. And then when you go to Jane Fonda, she went from making movies to making fitness videos. But it was also at a time in America when there was a big conversation about equal wage for women, and there was a movie called 9 to 5. So all of these things together, you know, form what turn out to be great movements, not just in this industry, but in this country. And right now, I think the great movement that we're seeing is that, attention is the scarcest resource of the 21st century. Instant gratification is taking way too long. And consumers, particularly millennials right now, are viewing things differently. Nobody's watching. No, I shouldn't say nobody's watching. 18% drop, I read recently, in certain NFL games. And, you know, the Olympics for NBC were off with viewership, and they're trying to make up that ad revenue. I think, first of all, young people don't watch television. Netflix is not television. And then the second one is nobody has 3.5 hours to endure anything anymore, back to attention. When you look at the NFL, we're not watching the games because everybody's involved in fantasy leagues. So my big thing that I'm trying to formalize so I can move forward with our brand is reality TV celebrates people who aren't real, and fantasy leagues are taking real people and putting them in different roles. So even though you're playing for the Giants or the Jets or the Steelers or somebody, you're on somebody's fantasy team, and that's become more important than the team you're actually playing for. So there's just a lot going on here, and I think it's a dynamic time where consumers will decide the future. 20 years ago, kids were chasing shoe companies. 20 years later, shoe companies are chasing kids.
Thanks for mentioning the Steelers, by the way. when it comes to the actual construction of the shoe, I know when I'm looking at a shoe, and obviously you know I'm not a runner by taking a look at me, but I still need great support, and I need that cushion on the heel, whether it's walking or not. What is the latest technology that you're using?
Yeah, that's a real good question. If you look at technology, there's been all of these technologies, including our ASICS gel, which has been around forever, that's popped up over time. But I think the new word today is different. It's called innovation. And I think, which is a technology, and I think what we're looking for is how do you have a dynamic fit, a precision fit for every consumer. I think in 10 years, every consumer is going to be their own brand, and every company is going to have to cater to their very, very precise individualness. So I think it's that. The other one is, how do you take materials that can absorb, you know, the shock of 8 times your body weight with on a collision with the ground, and how do you make that as light as possible? You know, because in the past it was always you had to sacrifice something. So the weight of it, you know, slightly was beneath the benefit of it. So right now I think there's this happy medium. I think there's a generation of people who grew up looking at athletic shoes as the busier they look, the more technical they were. And I think the future is going to be the simpler they are, the more they're going to help you perform. I always say the greatest technology is the human body. And our jobs are in this generation are designed to complement the human body. We want to put shoes on your foot that are absent of sensation. When you actually put them on, you don't realize they're there because they just become a part of who you are. And then when you're off the track or off the court or off the trail, whatever it may be, you want to put on a shoe that has a sensation so that your body can rejuvenate and get the blood vessels going. So that's the future, and those are the things we're working on.
My guest on Sports Jam is Gene McCarthy, President and CEO of ASICS America Corporation. Check out what the company's message is this year.
This is an open letter to anyone who wants to be an athlete. If you want it more than sleep, if you want it more than all-night parties, if you want it more than likes, if you want it more than perfect hair, more than straight teeth and a pretty nose, more than soft hands, if you really want to be an athlete, just wanting it isn't enough.
When you pick up a box of shoes, sometimes you say, oh, I guess they forgot to put them in. They're so light now. It's absolutely amazing. Is Gene McCarthy an innovator through the years, or are you inspiring innovation?
That's a real good question. I don't think I could ever call myself an innovator. I do find myself inspiring simply because I've been inspired. And I think it's my job to pass that down. When it comes to innovation, I think the only thing that I could ever say that I could even touch on is that I try to make people look at things just a little differently. I'm never going to be the guy with the idea, but I might be the guy that can say, why don't we look at this idea in a different context? So I would never give myself as being credit for being an innovator. I'm just a kid from the Bronx.
I come to you with this fantastic resume, and I'm a young guy, and I'm craving knowledge, and I'm craving the want to be a part of this industry. I sit down, I come into your office for the first time. What are you telling me?
Well, the first thing I would say to him or her is, what are you doing here? And hopefully the answer is they're going to tell me how they're going to help us, not what they want to do with their lives. That can come naturally if you help us first. The other thing I would tell them is you have to learn this thing from the outside in. I started as a tech rep. I worked in a store for Marty. I started then was in the field as a tech rep, and I worked my way into the corporate circle, and I've never forgotten those things. I also would say this, if you are a young person today and you want to work for any company, and maybe even particularly an athletic brand, try to get a job as one of the VPs or the executive's assistants. Don't relegate that job to just stirring coffee and ordering lunch, because that's not the game anymore. You will learn more from that perch than you will ever learn from just going up through the ranks. And the other one is, there's an old saying, if a salesman were meant to speak, he would have 2 mouths and 1 ear. I did that my whole career. I think most of my career is based on observing some terrific, amazing people around me. And I was able then to put that into my own parlance and my own vernacular and pass that along. So I would tell any young person to do the same.
This industry is so competitive. How do you get the edge to make sure that you're always the running shoe?
Yeah, it is a very competitive industry. It's amazing the things that go on. Recently, we just determined that we were going to take some of our functions to move to Boston. And I've heard from, I know a lot of people in this industry, I heard from two of our competitors, some executives that said, hey, great, stay away from my people. Very competitive industry. I think the best way to stay the edge is, I think there was a popular notion years ago with athletic shoe companies where if one went a certain way, everybody followed that way. I think it's just stay exactly who you are, you know, what your core purpose is, what is the smoldering pot that has driven your company since 1949 in our case, rather than try to outdo the other guys or outsmart the other guys. The other one is be nimble and be the chihuahua. Sometimes has a better move around the Great Dane, and rather than act like a big corporation. And then, you know, I always said this too, that, and this is really important to me, we don't own this brand. Consumers do. We just manage it for them and always keep that in sight.
So with that in mind, how often do you go to a top runner now and say, what are your needs? What aren't you getting from either the shoe that you're wearing or you have our best? What could make it better?
You know, it's interesting. We use our top runners to help our overall brand, too, and they love doing it. We have the Institute of Sports Science just right outside our headquarters in Kobe, Japan. I can assure you there's no other brand that has anything like this, having worked for all the other brands. So that's one thing. On the other hand, we do not want to, and it's a personal thing for me, I don't want any athlete on that track or on that field or on that surface unless the product they have works for them. It's never going to be treated like an endorsement. We treat our athletes like their family. And they feel comfortable with that. And they've all assured me they would never go out there, and we assured them we would never let them go out there unless everything was perfect. But I will share another thing with you. I had a conversation with one of our athletes yesterday. Her name is Queen Harrison, one of the fastest hurdlers in the world, and missed by 0.02 seconds of making the Olympic team. The only consolation for her is the three people who beat her won the gold, silver, and bronze in Rio. But anyway, we asked her when we first were trying to work with her on design concepts and what she needs, and our creative director said, "What do you do right before a race? What do you do?" And looking for this moment, and she said, "I put on makeup." So I think the dynamic of what an athlete is today and how they prepare themselves emotionally and in their head is sometimes more important than what they do physically. So we want to keep that in mind, too, when we're designing the products, that there might be just the right combination of a color, never mind the right fit and the right technology, that actually can inspire this athlete to just get that extra, 0.02 seconds next time.
And you've said that it was the moments before race that sometimes are your favorite, just simply tying up your shoe and thinking about what's going on. Is that pretty much the way it was for you?
It actually is that way for me to this day on any moment that is where I have to, belong to other people. I remember tying up my shoes, and they had to be perfect. I still have dreams that my shoes come untied. And they had to be perfect. Everything had to feel right. But I also remember that time sitting on the track, ready to go, and hearing nothing, just silence. It was the most peaceful time ever. It wasn't the most stressful. And I also remember even running in Madison Square Garden at the Milrose Games in the very first inaugural high school mile. I remember hearing nothing except the sound of track spikes on the track, not the crowd, and it was 20,000 people that night. So that's something that is really important to me, but if I prepare for a speech, if I have to speak to our employees, which I will do this Friday at our Christmas lunch, that's my moment of preparation, and still comes from tying those track spikes up when I was 13 years old.
You also speak to college students. What's been the best question you've ever received from a student?
It's interesting. I asked the dean at Marquette University, I said, how come these questions are so prolific? And he said, that's because you're in business, and when you sit at a board table or a meeting table, everybody's keeping the information. These kids want to give it and get it. I think they have a lot of questions. The curiosity is about why, not about what. And I found that particularly, recently at Marquette last year, I just had a lot of whys. So they would say to me, well, it's like when a little kid asks you, why is the sky blue? And you really don't have an answer. Those are the kind of questions I get, particularly from college students. And I think the biggest one I got was, why do we need so many athletic shoe companies? And I'm not really sure I know the answer to that, The other thing, when they all come up to you after, and they all say, can I have your business card? And I very politely say, no, you can't have my business card. If you want to find me, like everybody else can find me. One young guy walked up to me and said, Can I have your business card? And I said, I just told everybody no. And he goes, well, you went to college and lived in Sea House at Fordham University with my dad. Can I really have your business card? So I gave him my business card. So anyway, but they're very inquisitive, but they're also skeptical of the world. And I think particularly of modern marketing, I think they can see through it. And I learn more from those kids. The reason I do it is I learn more from those kids than I can teach those kids.
I got one more question after this one, but it's the holiday season. People are thinking about ASICs. They're thinking about footwear. They're thinking about style. What do you want to tell them?
I think if running is any part of your life and fitness is any part of your life, I can tell you confidently, having been around the block in this industry, we make beautiful, comfortable, quality shoes. And you would love owning them because they become best friends to you, just like your dog would be your best friend. I would also tell them that to be very discerning with their purchase and that you get what you pay for. And that's why we have premium pricing, but also make sure you get great service. It's a lost art, but there are these little running shops all over America where they do cater to that. Do them a favor, support the small business as well as get expert care. The last one is a very simple one that nobody pays attention to. Why would you spend $100 to $150 on a running shoe and then buy a cheap cotton sock, buy a really good sock? All your blisters that you've ever had were caused by the socks not interacting properly with the shoe rather than the shoe causing your blisters. Little tidbit for you there, Doug.
Very nice. And CrossFit shoes as well?
Yeah, we look at it this way. Instead of looking at, we have shoes for all different occasions, we do have different profiles of shoes so they can accommodate different movements of your foot, whether it's lateral, whether it's a collision with the ground like running, whether it's jumping, riding a bike, and they're all out there. But I would stay clear of categorizing shoes and rather find a shoe that, first of all, fits you really well. Second of all, you feel good about wearing, that it looks good on you, but also a shoe that you think can offer you multi-purposes based on what you do. But to buy one shoe for any specific sport, I think the way people are keeping fit today is so random that I don't think there's one shoe for any particular sport.
Gene McCarthy, Marty Licori, Vince Cartier, who's also been a guest on the show, terrific miler in New Jersey who had broke some records. What's inside you guys that make you successful long-distance runners? I mean, there's got to be more than just wanting it, because a lot of people want it. You guys wanted it but actually attained your goals.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it lives with me, Doug, to this day. First of all, I think we're all driven by the fear of failure. But there's a way to take that energy and turning into something positive. And then maybe more specifically, I'm proud of New York City the way it is now, but it wasn't exactly, didn't look like the future for me in 1977. And we use running as a way out, as a way, as I said earlier, to see the world. But inside, what burns is that fear of failure, you know. And I asked Tom Brady when I was at another company and he was one of our athletes, I asked him what motivated him. And this is probably the best answer for Marty, Vince, and anybody. I said, what motivates you? And he said, self-doubt. And I really believe that's the truth. I get up every morning and I contemplate the day ahead of me, not to pick up my dry cleaning, buy a quart of milk. I contemplate what's going to happen. It's a form of avid meditation in a way. And all the things that rise are my fears. And then there's something that makes us different than maybe other athletes, where we want to go out and conquer them rather than become subject to them.
Well, we certainly know that ASICS is in good feet, we should say, and maybe then hands. Gene McCarthy, the president and CEO of ASICS America Corporation, thanks for sitting down in New York City, your old home, and talking to us about your wonderful brand and your career here on Sports Jam.
Doug, thank you very much. It was a pleasure and an honor to be with you. Congratulations on what you do, and it's good for both of us to be here in the best city in the world, right?
No doubt about it.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the past shows by going to WBGO.org/Sports Jam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on iTunes. Thanks going out to Joe Favorito for helping us hook up with Gene McCarthy. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.